to thank you very much for your contributions on our conversation.
Standing in for Refilwe Mpakanyane.
Weekend Breakfast with Gugs Mshungu.
It's 11 minutes after 9 o'clock. Time for us to get into a wellness conversation, joined as always by resident clinical psychologist Khosi Giane. And we're talking about disapproval and how we deal, sometimes in some instances, not deal with disapproval. And we take your calls on this on 011-883-0702 and your SMSs on 31702. I wanted to know, I asked how you dealt with or how you deal with disapproval. Did you grow up in a home where your parents were affirming, they approved of you, they encouraged you? Or the reality is, because our parents do the best with what they have, perhaps they weren't approving and they were quite critical, and that has influenced how you deal with issues of approval. You can also send us a WhatsApp voice note on this on 0727021702. Khosi, good morning. As always, good to have you on the show.
Wintry greetings, Gooks. Thanks, yes, for the conversation again.
Winter is here.
Winter of our discontent.
Yes, although I enjoy winter, I find winter is a great time to, because I don't enjoy summer, I find it as a great time to kind of think and plan and rest. I find summer can be quite chaotic and it's busy, whereas in winter, you slow down a bit, you are encouraged to rest. And I think it's such a great regenerative, is that the word? A regenerative time before the hustle and bustle of, you know, the festive season. Granted, for a lot of people, the weather is awful, but I find it so great. It's like a bit cozy, things slow down a bit more, you can rest. I think, this is great. I find like I can think when it gets a little bit colder, which I can't do when it's warm.
A nice meaning. That's how I always think. I must have been a bear in my previous life because I could easily hibernate, except that we can't do that anymore. So even though there is that wish and there's that sense, but we can't, because we've got to get on with the business of life, right?
Life keeps happening, and it will happen whether you show up or not.
Absolutely.
So we're talking about disapproval this week, which I think is so interesting because I'm one of those people who really struggles with disapproval. So when we're talking about disapproval, what do we mean? Why does approval or a lack of approval matter so much?
Right. And that's the crux of the question, right? So what approval does is that it answers to our deep-seated longing to belong. And so approval enhances our sense of self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
It tells us that we are good enough in the eye of significant others that shape who we are. And these are all childhood experiences, early life experiences that lay the foundation for what happens in later life. So then disapproval does the exact opposite of that. It is a diminishment. Or at least we internalize it and interpret it as a diminishment of the self. I am therefore not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And what that then does is that it triggers anxiety, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is our attempt to mitigate that sense of emotional and psychological threat to the self.
Uh-huh.
In order to quieten things, in order to restore, in order to fill that cup of, okay, what do I need to do in order to be seen to be good enough? What do I need to do? We go the extra mile.
Yes.
To compensate for that sense of not good enough.
Yesterday, interestingly, I was watching David Letterman has a new season of his show, My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. One of his guests was Will Smith, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
And Will tells the story of his father. His father was a tough man, if I remember correctly. He was either he had either been in the military or police, but that detail doesn't matter. But his father was quite tough, and Will says to him, his father was says about him, he was both the most loved and the most feared man. He loved him, but he was afraid of him. And he said his father used to say to him, when it came to any kind of achievement, that 99% is as good as zero. And he says when he then, and then David Letterman then says to him, how did this influence you and when you then had kids. And he says one day he was in therapy saying, you know, I say to my kids, 99% is as good as zero. And he says the therapist looked at him and said, that's actually not correct. 99 is possibly as far away as you can get from zero. But but Will tells the story of how his father was this like really tough man. And it was and I thought it was so interesting that it was encapsulated in this idea of, you know, 99% is as good as zero. And many of us have heard that in some form or another, you know, some parents saying, if you got 99%, why didn't you get the other percent? That you should be first team or it doesn't matter. This idea of excellence, it must always be great or perfect. What happens if you grew up in the kind of home where you were told, for instance, you know, 99 is as good as zero?
And here's the message underneath all of that. It is that it is not good enough. Therefore, you are not good enough. And isn't it also just such a dichotomous way of thinking about things? It's either this or that, right? And it's all or nothing type of thing. And therefore, what that then does is that it tells you there's a conditional goodness to you. You are only good enough if, and anything less takes you completely to a zero, which is a dichotomous thinking, which is really, you know, putting you, it sends you on a pedestal to strive for perfectionism, which the opposite of is that you become a perfectionist to yourself and to others. And that will show up in how critical you become of others, because you are critical of yourself because that's the parental voice you have internalized. And that's the language you speak to yourself with, and therefore that's the currency with which you relate to others as well.
And speaking as, like, just listening to you speak, I'm a perfectionist. I'm very much the kind of person that I'm not going to do something if it's not going to be absolutely perfect.
I remember, go home.
It must be great.
That's that dichotomous thing.
It must be amazing and fantastic and seminal and monumental, or I don't do it. And what that means is sometimes I don't do things because I'm afraid I won't be good at them. But that is life, right? Unless you, you know, you have an innate ability, most things you won't be good at them in the beginning. But I do often have this like immense fear of doing stuff because I think, it won't be perfect. It won't be great. Right. It won't be amazing. So I can't do it. And is that a manifestation of this fear of disapproval?
Yes, absolutely. So, and here's the interesting thing is that where there is fear of failure, which is what you're talking about, there's equally fear of success. Because success puts you on a pedestal. It raises the bar. But then it becomes a vicious cycle because you've achieved that, then what? So your good enoughness is never a state of being. It's always a conditional thing. That's in the bag now. What's my next? And you then put yourself back on the pedestal because now success spirals that fear of failure. What if I don't make it again? Is this your best? Is this all that you amount to? Right? And that's what fuels that imposter syndrome, the perfectionism, that fear of, you know, I'm never going to be good enough unless, that conditionalness. And therefore we constantly, and it triggers, as I said, that anxiety. And we are constantly, you know, trying to mitigate that by getting on the pedestal, by getting on the treadmill to shore up our sense of, or our fear of being found wanting.
And then also, what happens if we are so afraid of failure or not being approved of that we pull away, that we kind of hide ourselves because there is this fear of rejection?
Sure, absolutely. And that in itself is a form of quiet desperation, right? So we become as a self-defensive, self-preservation, so that I don't fail, let me hide. Right. So we become self-effacing, self-sacrificing, so that we don't risk that disapproval. But even in that silence, it becomes a form of quiet desperation, just as it is a form of quiet desperation when we get on that treadmill to run and keep on the treadmill and keep pushing and raising that bar so that we are again found, good enough and approved of.
An interesting WhatsApp here from Kingsley. Kingsley says, Sanbonani, there's something liberating in being able to identify the people you will never please no matter what. In my work with children, I've learned that the initial reaction to their attempts is critical to their learning self-confidence. And I often see this tweet where people say things like, disappoint your parents early on, because then after that, you're free. Once you get the tattoo, get the nose ring, drink the alcohol, disappoint them early on, because after that, you can be free.
You're free, indeed. That's such a beautiful way of putting it, Kingsley. And I've said this before, that one of our biggest jobs or responsibilities or burdens of responsibility in life is to disappoint your parents. You are not their clone. It is part of the ego of the parent being adjusted. It is part of parents knowing that you are here through them for you. You're not their toy. You're not their thing through which they are going to, feed their ego need for this, that, and the other, or compensate for their own inadequacies, right? So it is an important part, because otherwise, if you don't, you risk being a prisoner to that external locus of control, right, where you depend on others for approval. And that's the big thing, because it is your parents who are your primary caregivers. These are the people who write into you who you are, your sense of self-worth, and so on. If you can disappoint them, you're free indeed.
Mm. And for people then who are parents, so we're talking about, for instance, us in relation to our parents, but then that also sounds as if for people who are parents, that you have to accept that your kids are going to disappoint you. They're not going to be the thing you want them to be.
Yes, they are not your toys. They are full human beings in and of their own, with their own aspirations, with their own strengths and their own weaknesses. So they are going to achieve certain things. They are going to make their choices, their own choices in life, which you will not necessarily approve of, and that's okay. And if you can bear, as Oraya Mountain Dreamer says, if you can bear disappointing another in order to be true to yourself, that's the ultimate. And it is okay. And let's have that conversation and accept that I would have, as a parent, I would have wished this for you. However, nevertheless, I do accept it. It is a humbling, a necessary humbling at that.
Mm.
And it's not one of those, I'll put you in your place, kind of, that comes from another level of ego, right?
Mm.
It is a saying, just as you are a person, so am I. You are perfectly imperfect in your longings for all this perfection is for me to achieve all of these wonderful things, which is great because it comes from a good place. However, that good place of your parents wanting this, that, and the other for you needs to be attenuated. It needs to be grounded in a humility, not necessarily humiliation.
Mm-hmm. Because as you're speaking, I'm also just thinking about if we are to accept that we are all imperfect, we are imperfect, everyone else is imperfect, and we kind of are open about that and the things, the bits of us that aren't the way we would want them or that aren't ideal, what does that do for intimacy? And not just intimacy in romantic relationships, but in all our relationships.
Yeah. It has a sense of reverence for ourselves. It cultivates an equally reverent sense for other people, that we are all human beings on this journey and we are all kind of doing our little bit to get on with it, doing our best, to get on with it, and let us treat each other with that. So if we could then come to intimate relationships, right, it helps us to deal with this word, my partner. It says we need to be aware of the self-other boundary, and it's a very important boundary to recognize, and it's a very important line to be able to walk and navigate, to ask the question, who am I to myself, right? To know that there are things that my partner will not approve of. For example, I wear a nose ring, which my partner doesn't like, and I'm okay with that. He doesn't have to like everything that I do.
Mm-hmm.
in the same way that I don't like everything that he does, right?
Mm-hmm.
So once we can get to that point where we can accept that I am here for me, as me first, before I am your partner. And it is that thing when you introduce somebody, a partner, and then you say, this is my partner so-and-so, as opposed to this is so-and-so my partner, because they are themselves first before they have a relationship with you.
Mm-hmm. And also,
we can honor that.
And in introducing them, there is often this anxiety around, oh, my mom won't like them, my dad won't like them, my sister won't like them. But again, if you go, this is who they are, and whether you like them or not doesn't really matter.
Sure. And we're not saying be callous about that, right? To say, I don't care what people think. It's not coming from that place, right? It comes from a place that says, people are allowed an opinion on my partner, for example, right? And they are free to have an opinion, just like I have an opinion of my partner, right? They also are free to. And maybe we have a relationship where we can be open with each other about that. I can safely allow myself, avail myself to hear where they are coming from, to hear the concerns, to hear where their disapproval is coming from, and respect that as an opinion, right? One amongst many. And as the saying goes, opinions are like belly, everybody's got one. Without me needing their approval, without me needing to please them in everything that concerns my life.
Hmm. Sure. That's where we need to leave it. Kosi, always a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kosi.
That's our resident clinical psychologist, Kosi Giani, speaking to us about how we deal with fears or anxiety around disapproval.